Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this state, Tuesday, September 18th, 2018. Let's begin with some of today's headlines. The first headline reads, Frasca, that's F-R-A-S-C-A, Frasca International. Urbana Company lands military contract. Simulators will teach chopper pilots to fly. This article is written by Ben Zigterman and is based out of Urbana. In its 60th year, Frasca International has landed the largest contract in company history. Over the next 2 years, the Urbana-based flight simulation company will build 10 helicopter simulators for pilots training at a naval air station in Florida. It's part of a $73 million military contract awarded to Colorado-based Flight Safety Services Corporation. Frasca will build the simulators as a subcontractor. Flight Safety, one word, will train the pilots. We have to deliver all 10 devices within 22 months after the contract was awarded, said Randy Gawenda, Frasca's business development manager. They'll help train over 600 Naval and Marine Corps Rodo aviators per year. Frasca was founded in 1958 by Rudy Frasca, a flight instructor for the Navy who attended the University of Illinois and invented his own flight simulator. The company was located on the southeast corner of Neal and Green Streets in Champaign until 1990, when the factory moved to Frasca Field in North Urbana. The company sells simulators around the world to aviation schools, commercial airlines, or in this case, the Navy. The Navy's existing simulators are 30 years old, Gawenda said, so this contract allowed them to go basically from worst to first in terms of simulation technology. This will be a big leap for them, he said. A simulator looks like a cockpit extended in a big fishbowl, made of screens, projecting world around the pilot, Gawenda said. They're kind of like the flight simulators at amusement parks, just a little bit more professional or commercial grade, he said. They're similar in concept, but different in practical application. They'll simulate a TH-57 Sea Ranger with three simulators featuring a 180-degree by 40-degree field of view with a vibration system. The other seven will have a wider 240-degree by 70-degree field of view that allows for simulating hovering and other advanced maneuvers. And if the Navy upgrades to a new type of aircraft or more advanced Sea Ranger, Gawenda said their simulators are adaptable. Our design is very modular, he said. If they do get new helicopters, it would be a fairly straightforward transition for them. Frasca has about 150 employees, and most of us will be involved with the Navy contract in some capacity, Gawenda said. The next headline reads, Treating Chronic Pain. Physicians, patients still see a place for opioids. This article is written by Deborah Pressey and is based out of Urbana. Life with chronic pain started for Kristen Blanton, that's B-L-A-N-T-O-N, with a back injury. The pain persisted after surgery, then through years worth of one treatment she tried after another. Then her doctor put her on a low-dose opioid medication that worked for her and continues to work a decade later. That's the only thing that really gives me some semblance of a normal life, to where I can take care of myself and function, said 45-year-old Blanton of Danville. While she's not having a problem with her own use of opioids, Blanton said many pain patients have found themselves ridiculed and stigmatized in the midst of national opioid addiction epidemic, in the middle of this national opioid addiction epidemic. You get labeled an addict, a pill seeker, Blanton said. Some people don't speak to their families anymore because of it. Still many others with serious pain have had a tough time getting doctors to prescribe opioids at all, especially since the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention published new prescribing guidelines in 2016, Blanton said.
The guidelines were intended for primary care doctors prescribing opioids such as Percocet, Vicodin, and OxyContin for purposes other than active cancer, palliative care, and end-of-life care.
Among the recommendations are that preference be given to non-opioid solutions for patients in other categories, and that opioids be prescribed at the lowest effective doses possible.
Blanton said the plight of pain patients
being abruptly cut off from medication motivated her to join a national movement called
Don't Punish Pain,
which will be conducting rallies today in Urbana and several other cities.
Blanton, a co-organizer of the Urbana rally,
said Americans need to distinguish between legitimate and illegal uses of opioid drugs.
Anyone can wind up in pain, she said.
We're all just one serious illness, a horrible car accident away from needing strong pain medication,
Blanton said.
Her own pain began after she fell at work,
tore a disc in her back, and had spinal fusion surgery, Blanton said.
After the surgery, she was left with chronic pain in her back and legs, and then tried years of acupuncture, water therapy,
use of a spinal cord stimulator, or stimulators, and spinal injections.
She has since been diagnosed with a chronic pain disease called fibromyalgia.
Blanton doesn't worry about becoming addicted to opioid medication.
Her dosage is low.
She sees a pain specialist once a month
who monitors her carefully.
And she says, this is what works for me.
Still, about 72,000 Americans died of drug overdoses last year.
With about two-thirds of the deaths linked to opioids.
That was more than a four-fold increase over 2002,
according to provisional data released last month by the CDC.
Nearly 30,000 of last year's overdose deaths
and the sharpest increase were linked to the illegal use of potent synthetic opioids,
largely fentanyl.
Dr. Ivan Santiago, a pain specialist at the clinic,
said opioids are prescribed a lot less freely these days, but he still sees a place for this treatment option,
with restrictions and careful monitoring.
When at least two or three other kinds of treatments have been tried, continuing pain is impacting quality of life.
Santiago too has seen the stigma attached to patients,
sometimes even by their own family members when they take opioids for pain management, he said.
It's come to the point where anyone with chronic pain is demonized, looked down upon.
If anyone finds out they're taking medication, he said.
Safe prescribing opioids includes limiting dosages and amounts,
seeing patients frequently and asking careful questions, Santiago said.
Things have to add up, he said.
If someone says their pain is severe, yet my exam doesn't seem to justify that.
My radar goes up, and I have to start thinking of possible abuse.
So it takes a little bit of investigation work.
Santiago said he has had success gradually lowering opioid dosages
for many patients, and for some, weaning them off the drugs completely.
There are also those pain patients who have continued opioid treatment without problems at the same level for as long as 15 years, he said.
I don't think if you spent a day in pain clinic with us, you would question the patient's intentions
and their need for help, he said.
The Don't Punish Pain rally in Urbana is open to all, Blanton said.
It will be from noon to 2 p.m. today outside the federal courthouse at 201 South Vine Street in Urbana.
And as a follow-up to that, this is an article, the title is called U.S. Senate, GOP Dems Unite Behind Bill Fighting Addictive Drugs.
This article is written by the Associated Press and the State of Washington.
Republicans and Democrats joined forces to speed legislation combating the misuse of opioids and other addictive drugs through Senate passage Monday.
A rare campaign in show of unity against a growing deadly health crisis.
The measure passed by a 99-to-1 vote Monday evening.
Senator Mike Lee, a Republican of Utah, voted against it.
It takes wide aim at the problem, including increasing scrutiny of arriving international mail that may include illegal drugs.
It makes it easier for the National Institutes of Health to approve research on non-addictive painkillers and for pharmaceutical companies to conduct that research.
The Food and Drug Administration would be allowed to require drug makers to package smaller quantities of drugs like opioids.
And there would be new federal grants for treatment centers, training emergency workers, and research on prevention.
Lawmakers' focus on combating opioids.
Comes amid alarming increases in drug overdose deaths,
with the government estimating more than 72,000 of them last year.
That figure has grown annually and is double the 36,000 who died in 2008.
Besides the sheer numbers, Congress has been drawn to the problem because of its broad impact on Republican, Democratic, and swing states alike.
The House approved its own drug legislation this summer.
Congressional leaders hope the two chambers will produce compromise legislation and send it to President Donald Trump for his signature by year's end.
The next headline reads,
University of Illinois,
student influx,
a financial blessing.
Budget planning includes 4.6% spending bump.
This article was written by Julie Worthen and is based out of Urbana.
All those new students at the University of Illinois this fall are bringing in another $62.6 million in tuition and fee income,
up to 5% over last year.
Even with a fourth consecutive tuition freeze for in-state students,
the U of I will see significant income growth
because of a 2.7% enrollment increase across its three campuses
to nearly 85,597 students,
a new high.
A proposed operating budget for fiscal year 2019,
which runs through next June,
shows a 4.6% boost in tuition income across the U of I system
to just over $1.3 billion.
That compares with $1.24 billion last year, U of I officials said on Monday.
The Urbana campus will see a 4.27% increase of about $33 million
to $814 million, officials said.
This fall's freshman class in Urbana is a record 7,609 students,
several hundred more than planned because of a higher than expected number of in-state students accepting the U of I's offer.
Overall, campus enrollment now exceeds 49,000 students,
including graduate and online students.
The U of I's overall target is to reach 93,000 students by 2021
at its three campuses combined, including online enrollment.
To get there, we have to grow about 3% a year during this five-year time period.
So we're on track, said Executive Vice President Barbara Wilson.
We increased our enrollment, and that adds more tuition income.
A good chunk of that will go towards student financial aid, as well as other educational needs, she said.
We're trying to hire faculty, but we always emphasize financial aid.
The $6.8 billion operating budget, up 4.6% from last year, will be considered next week
when U of I Board of Trustees meets in Urbana.
A board committee reviewed the numbers Monday.
Overall, the U of I will see an increase of nearly $300 in income,
including tuition and fees, state appropriations, and other sources in the fiscal year of 2019.
The U of I's state appropriation is up 0.9%
to $604 million.
Gift income has increased about 22%.
The result of a system-wide $3.1 billion fundraising campaign,
said Vice President and CFO Avijit Ghosh.
The budget includes about, or almost, $1.777 billion in quote-unquote payments on behalf
from the state to cover pensions and employee benefits,
more than $2.26 billion in unrestricted funds,
which includes state tax revenue,
tuition income and other sources,
and almost $2.8 billion in restricted funds,
such as targeted gifts,
research grants, contracts,
money for patient care,
and income from auxiliary facilities such as State Farm Center.
Most educational activities are funded through unrestricted money.
The total operating budget without the state pension and benefit payments is about $5.06 billion.
About 46% of that goes to the Urbana campus.
The U of I Chicago, including the large healthcare operation,
consumes about 48%.
The U of I system offices and the U of I Springfield each take up about 2%.
The largest expense item is salaries and benefits at $2.58 billion,
or about 51% total.
That's a 3.7% increase over last year.
Spending on student financial aid is up 6.5% to about $385 million.
By function, 19% of the budget goes to instruction,
15% to research,
15% to U of I Hospital in Chicago,
11% to academic support, 10% to auxiliary facilities,
9% to public service,
6% to scholarships,
6% to institutional support,
6% to plant expenses
such as maintenance,
and 3% to student services.
Ghosh said the U of I's top budget priorities are faculty hiring, student aid, and physical infrastructure.
By the numbers, how the University of Illinois' proposed $6.83 billion budget for fiscal year 2019 breaks down.
Urbana-Champaign, $3.04 billion.
Chicago, $3.37 billion.
Springfield, $139.3 million.
And the U of I system offices, $283.5 million.
And now let's take a look at our weather forecast over the next few days. This is provided to us by Greg Soule and his column on the weather front. The remnants of Hurricane Florence will accelerate east-northeastward, producing downpours in the southeast while bringing showers to the northeast. An area of low pressure will develop along a cold front stretching from the upper Midwest to the north-central plains, generating heavy rain from the northern plains into western and northern areas of the Corn Belt. Chilly conditions north of the front will contrast with late-season heat from the south-central plains to the Appalachians. Out west, dry weather is expected, but showers are expected to arrive and intensify over the lower Four Corners region by midweek. The 6 to 10 day outlook calls for above normal temperatures nationwide. Today, 89 degrees. Very warm, partly cloudy. West wind 6 to 12 miles per hour. Overnight, warm, isolated shower early. A few clouds. Southwest to south wind around 5 miles per hour. Chance of rain will be at 20%. Wednesday, the high is 90, the low is 65. Hot, more humid, mostly sunny. South to southeast wind 6 to 12 miles per hour. Overnight, warm and humid. Thursday, the high will be 92, the low will be 70. Hot and humid, partly cloudy. Friday, the high is 82, the low is 67. Cooler, mostly cloudy. A couple of showers and thunderstorms in spots. Chance of rain is at 60%. Saturday, the high will be 75, the low will be 60. Illini football at Memorial Stadium. A 50% chance of rain, thunderstorm. Kickoff temperature will be 77 degrees. Northeast wind will be 10 miles per hour, and it will be partly sunny. And now let's look at top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Jim Rosso. The latest stop in Jason Seaman's pro sports tour, Wrigley Field. The former Mohammed Seymour star, credited with stopping a school shooting in May in Noblesville, Indiana, threw out a ceremonial first pitch before Sunday's Reds-Cubs game in Chicago. In June, the left-handed Seaman was honored before a Cardinals game in St. Louis. The NFL's Bears and Rams also plan to celebrate his act of bravery. At NewsGazette.com, here's what was trending at our website, which in a 7-day period ending Sunday saw 1,349,750 page views. The three top stories. 1. Rantoul woman dies in crash on U.S. 45 north of Urbana. 2. U of I's Chief Alinewick report. Develop new traditions, but honor divisive past. 3. Cassano case. Judge finds probable cause. The three top sports stories. 1. Inside Illini basketball. Liddell watch. 2. Live South Florida. 3. Illini lose Carter for season. The three top videos were 1. Illinois snake bit at receiver. 2. Illini defense will be tested by USF. And 3. More offense might be necessary for Illini this weekend. The three top photo galleries were 1. Burnham Mansion demolition. 2. CU Pride Parade 2018. And 3. High above Champaign. In history, area history, in 1918, after Mildred Buckles of Champaign enlisted in the Navy, she was appointed a corporal over a company of women stenographers serving in the Great War. In 1968, Mrs. William E. Levis announced a $1 million pledge to help fund a $2 million faculty center on the University of Illinois campus. In 2003, a few weeks after opening a Wiccan bookstore, Telepathic Media was already expanding its presence in Hoopston. The Reverend Ed Hubbard, the company's owner and chief executive officer, signed a lease on an old two-story, 13,000-square-foot building at 112 West Main Street. Once renovated, he planned to open a learning and development center for WitchSchool.com, an internet-based school teaching the Wiccan religion, and launch an artist-in-residence program there. International history. Today's highlight, on September 18, 1975, newspaper heiress Patricia Hearst was captured by the FBI in San Francisco 19 months after being kidnapped by the Sibianese Liberation Army. Also on this date, in 1851, the first edition of the New York Times was published. And in 1947, the National Security Act, which created a national military establishment and the position of Secretary of Defense, went into effect. The next headline reads, Champaign City Council, vote due on yard waste pickup for all. This article is written by Tim Dittman and is based out of Champaign. Ahead of the Champaign City Council's vote on restoring yard waste and Christmas tree collection to all residential properties, officials say they don't anticipate high demand or increased costs. Public Works Director Dennis Schmidt said that since 2014, the city has only collected from single-family homes and apartment buildings with four or fewer units. Staff are recommending that that be expanded to include things like fraternity and sorority houses at the University of Illinois, large apartment buildings, and mixed-use developments. Schmidt said his office hasn't heard much about collection from people in those properties, so he expects the new rules to be budget neutral. The City Council is set to vote on the collection expansion at its meeting at 7 p.m. today in the City Building. The next headline reads, Centennial High School, Real Goal Getters. Unit 4 High School Program Having Positive Impact on Minority Males. This article is written by Alberto Toledo and is based out of Champaign. Most high school students wouldn't sacrifice their Junes and Julys for anything. But for more than 30 Unit 4 students, Mondays and Tuesdays this summer were spent chanting together, eating together, and learning leadership skills together. These are students who have struggled socially and academically and needed a little push to get them on the right track, said Sheldon Turner, Career Services Placement Liaison for Operation Hope. He and Unit 4 administrators, as well as members of the community and Champaign Police, put together the Goal Getters program, and it has already resulted in better grades and more realistic thinking from the young men who participated in it. Had they not gone to the first day of the program on June 4th, seniors Meckel Brown and Javandria Johnson wouldn't have seen the potential of skills-based careers in pipe fitting and welding. Brown, who plays football at Centennial, is still hoping for an athletic scholarship, but said right now he's focusing on keeping his friends in check. We see each other almost every day at school, Brown said of the Goal Getters. We see each other and remind each other of what they should be doing. If we see someone doing something reckless, we remind them not to do that stuff. At its core, the Goal Getters are a support group that builds on the popularity of some of these largely African-American students who seem to know everyone. Goal Getters, said Turner, was an opportunity for kids to make some money through community service work and discuss potential careers and job opportunities. I would like to say that for some, things have changed, Turner said, and maybe all of them have changed somehow. For the most part, they all have shown some signs of growth, but it's going to take more than 8 weeks. Centennial Assistant Principal Caleb Carter called the group of a dozen students that gathered at the school last week the quote-unquote founding fathers. When asked what their next steps would be, though, many in the group said they want to leave Champaign-Urbana. As long as you leave Champaign, as long as you leave your hometown, you're going to succeed. I feel like that, Junior Tyrone Fulwilly said. You can't stay out of trouble if you're in your own city. Sophomore Sharman Brown agreed. Me personally, I want to get out because I don't want to be around nobody out here, he said, responding to Fulwilly. Say Fulwilly got on the best track he can. There's going to be a lot of people that are going to try to get him down. There's going to be a lot of people from the past that he's done bad stuff with that are going to try to get him back to doing the same thing. When asked if the program has made them lose old friends, some of them said yes. But Turner reassured them that those same people will see what they've done and return to their friend circle in a better way. Eventually, your respect level is going to be so high, they're going to come to you and ask you where they can get a job or how they can get better in school, Turner said. Johnson and others said they were already goal setters before the program, but goal getters, taught them how to achieve those goals. It was like a boost, Johnson said. Goal Getters is continuing on the semester as an after-school program with a new group of students. Working with the first group has taught Turner more about what it is to be human. No one is perfect, he said. We have some setbacks, but we can learn from those setbacks and we can also be able to help ourselves. This program gives them the opportunities to get their foot in the door for something much bigger than they see now. Turner teaches the students that it may take time to get where you want to be, but you can get there. With them being able to see the light at the end of the tunnel, that's great, he said. But we also do reality checks with them. We show them, this is what can happen if you want to stay on the negative side and keep in trouble. And this is what you can accomplish with positivity. The next headline reads, Hines Family Foundation Grant. Green Space Study Reaps Green. U of I Professor's Work Receives $250,000 Grant by Julie Worth. And this article is based out of Urbana. A University of Illinois professor who studies the impact of green space on health, crime, and aggression in urban settings has won a $250,000 unrestricted grant from the Hines Family Foundation. Ming Kuo, an environmental psychologist, was honored in the environment category in the 23rd annual awards named for the late U.S. Senator John Hines. Kuo's research has affected urban planning and design in the United States and internationally, including a $10 million tree planting initiative in Chicago, and led to new approaches to treating patients. Her rigorous studies have demonstrated the health benefits of connecting with nature, especially for children's development, the Hines Family Foundation said. Kuo has studied the relationship between nature and rates of crime and violence, well-being and coping, exercise and vitality and attention, self-control and learning. In the 1990s, Kuo and Bill Sullivan, co-founders of the U of I's Human Environment Research Lab, studied a public housing complex where residents were randomly assigned to apartments, some with greener settings and some without. Tests showed that residents in buildings with greenery had lower rates of aggression and violence and correlated with lower crime rates. In the 2000s, Kuo and Andrea Faber-Taylor found that ADHD symptoms in children decreased after short-term activities in green outdoor settings. A follow-up study on children with milder symptoms found they demonstrated better concentration after only 20 minutes in a park than they did after other walks in neighborhood and downtown settings. Her research shows natural spaces are not luxuries or add-ons to urban design, but essential to community well-being and to our children's mental and physical health and development, Teresa Hines, chairwoman of the Hines Family Foundation, said in a release. Kuo's work has helped shape federal landscaping guidelines and research agendas by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the National Institutes of Health, and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Agencies in Wales, Canada, the Netherlands, and the Caribbean are drawing on her research to argue for more urban green space. There's a growing realization among urban planners that nature plays an important role in the functioning of a city, Kuo said. I don't do research to have it sit on a shelf. So seeing changes, such as the commitment to tree planting in Chicago, is very exciting to me and my colleagues. The next headline reads, Jason Van Dyke Trial. Shooting video plays on repeat. This article is written by Don Babwin and is based out of Chicago. The last moments of Laquan McDonald's life played over and over again for the jury. An officer pulls up, gets out of a squad car, and opens fire as the black teenager walks away from police, a small knife in one hand. McDonald crumples to the ground. More bullets are fired into his body. The video of the October 20th, 2014 shooting is so central to the murder trial of Officer Jason Van Dyke that jurors watched it at least five times during the first day of testimony, Monday, the first time just 15 minutes into opening statements. The next headline reads, Driving Under the Influence, Man Behind Crash Gets 2 Years Probation. This article is written by Tim Dittman and is based out of Urbana. A St. Joseph man who admitted to being under the influence of drugs and causing a crash last fall on Interstate 74 will be on probation for 2 years. Clayton Holzinger, 21, pleaded guilty Monday to unlawful possession of a controlled substance and misdemeanor driving under the influence in the November 2017 crash. According to state police, the crash happened in the eastbound lanes of I-74 between Urbana and St. Joseph when Holzinger's vehicle left the road, came back onto the pavement, and struck another vehicle. Holzinger's vehicle then left the road again, overturned, and struck the median wires. Holzinger suffered minor injuries. The other driver, a 20-year-old Foosland man, was not hurt. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date today, Tuesday, September 18th, 2018. We'll resume shortly with part two, so please stay with us. Thank you very much for listening, and we hope you all have a wonderful day.